We had said last time, before our break for Arvit, that for biblical mitzvot, we have to evaluate kezayit as being more than for rabbinic mitzvot. And we said that that gives us the conclusion, the number of 4.42 ounces for a revius. Again, that's different than a kezayis. A revius is 1.5 times an egg. 1.5 eggs is the volume that one should drink of the that's the volume you have to drink in order to make a bachachona. And that's the volume your cup has to be able to contain when you're going to make kiddush on that cup, or you're going to use that cup for other biblical mitzvot. So that's the revius going with the more stringent opinion. The more lenient opinion says that a revius is 3.3 ounces, which means that on the Seder, where the four cups are biblical, so if the four cups are rabbinic and not biblical, I'm sorry, then we can go with the more lenient opinion, which is 3.3 ounces. Let's see that again in the glass cup, so we got a picture of what that is. Is it possible to... Yeah, I need that glass cup. And the one right next to it, please. Thank you.
It's never described to have a kezayit of a liquid. It's always.
It is. That's there are two opinions as to whether liquids we go by kezayis or by a revius.
I've always seen revius.
Yeah. So really, that's a machlokes. It's really two opinions in the Mishnah, and it comes out to also okay. Our revius is about this much. This is the amount your glass has to contain. So you're talking about a very small kiddush cup. Your cup, this is a revius. If you've drank this much, you drank everything you had to. You have to drink the majority of this much. Rov revius. Now, if you have a cup that holds this much, you don't have to, but it's preferable to drink the majority of the cup. We hold that ideally you should drink the majority of the cup. Even if you cannot get before the Seder a cup that holds this much, if you have a cup that holds this much, your cup holds a lot. And you know that if you're going to drink the majority of the cup, by the third cup you're going to be out. There's no way you're holding out the Seder. So then rely on the opinion, which is the basic halachic opinion, which says that all you have to drink is the majority of this revius. Meaning all you have to drink is the majority of 3.3 ounces, which is 1.65, more than 1.65. Any amount more than 1.65 ounces, you've drank enough. So if you're going to be at the Seder and you're not going to be able to hang out, if you drink too much wine, which is the case with me, ideally you should get a cup that holds this much, 3.3 ounces.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. You said your place, we drink wine?
We drink whatever you want. There's going to be grape juice and wine by me. But we're going to discuss, we haven't yet discussed whether it's preferable wine or grape juice. We'll get to that. 1.65 is the amount you have to drink. You have to drink a drop more than that. But your cup has to contain 3.3 ounces for the Seder. For Kiddush Friday night, your cup has to contain 4.4 ounces. But for the Seder, where all the cups of wine are going to be rabbinic, all you need is 3.3 ounces. And you have to drink the majority of the cup. If you have a bigger cup, then ideally you should drink the majority of your cup. So now we've defined the revius. As far as when it comes to biblical mitzvot and rabbinic mitzvot. Now we have to define a kezayit. So we said a revius is 1.5 eggs. And we said a kezayit is approximately half an egg. So do the math. How many kezayit are in a revius? About 3, right? We have 3 kezayitim in a... No? We have 1.5 eggs, and each egg is 2 kezayitim. So one egg is 2, the other half is another 1. So we have 3, right? Okay, so we have to divide our revius by 3 in order to get a kezayit. So on rabbinic mitzvot, our kezayit is going to be 1.1 ounces. And on biblical mitzvot, like eating matzahs, so then our kezayit is going to be 1.4 ounces. This is volume. And now we're going to crush up matzahs and try to see how much matzah gets you that volume. So then we'll know at the Seder how much matzah we have to eat. Now, I didn't bring handmade matzah, and most of us are going to eat handmade matzah at the Seder. So we'll have to deal with the machine matzahs. Just a second, please.
Big cup.
Now, because we're talking about biblical mitzvot, so we have to be a drop more stringent, and that's why ideally we should have 1.5 ounces. Remember, we said it's 1.4, but we rounded it in a few places, so it comes out to 1.5 a kezayit. Now, for stringencies, then we could use the other. We could be more lenient, and then we could rely on 1.1. What we said in the beginning, that the more lenient opinion would be 1.1. Now, if you have a grandparent or someone who's ill and you need to be more lenient than that, then you should contact your local Orthodox rabbi. There's room to be even more lenient than that. But for us, where we're not looking for leniencies beyond that, we're looking for what's the minimum, what do I have to do? So what we have to do is on rabbinic mitzvot, 1.1 ounces, and on biblical mitzvot, 1.5 ounces. Now, if Rabbi Feinstein writes over here that a matzah, 7 by 6.25 inches. Can we get a matzah, please? And he puts it over here, you can measure it. We can take the bag, you don't have to open it. Okay, let's measure it. Matzah is about 6.5 here. He says it's 6.25 by, not exactly, by almost 7, yeah. Okay, so about 6.5 by 7. These are machine-made matzahs, yeah?
Is that the reason why it has a ruler?
Yeah, that's the idea, to measure.
Look, I have one too.
Yeah, fair. So a matzah like this, that's about 7 by 6.5 inches, that's about that amount. Now, we said one matzah like this is about 1.5 ounces. Okay. Now, if you look at this, what we should do, we're not going to be able to do tonight, maybe tomorrow, is grind up hand matzah and see how much hand matzah fits into that amount. To 1 point, because it's a different density, the hand matzah. How much is going to give us 1.5 fluid ounces? But if you know the volume, and you do know the volume of 1.5 ounces, we've seen that here, this is 3.3. Let's figure a little under this, right? That's the volume of matzah you want, so you could estimate. Kezayis used to be estimated. People always estimated a kezayis. Now, the next thing we're going to have to deal with is maror. Maror, we said, and nowadays is a rabbinic mitzvah, right? We don't have to eat maror biblically. We have a rabbinic mitzvah to eat maror. So then we could go with the more lenient opinion for a kezayis. And over here, Rabbi Feinstein writes that it's a rabbinic mitzvah, like we said, we could go with a more lenient opinion of 1 or 1.1 fluid ounces. There's an even more lenient opinion of 0.7 fluid ounces. So let's see. The Torah tells us we have to have a bitter herb, and the Torah says maror, the Torah calls it in plural. It says you eat the Korban Pesach al matzot umrorim, together with matzahs, and merorim. Merorim is plural. Many maror. And from there we learn out that there is more than one kind of maror. And the Mishnah states that there are 5 species of plants which are called maror. One of them is also called maror. And the Mishnah tells us that there is a preference to which you use. Ideally you should use them, the first one is chasa, and then it enumerates the other ones. Traditionally, people were always using horseradish, probably because that's what was available in Europe. So the horseradish has a very good tradition. On the other hand, the horseradish isn't the first one listed in the Mishnah. The first one listed in the Mishnah is chasa. The problem with chasa, with our lettuce, is that it has bugs, which are very hard to find. And if you buy regular lettuce at a supermarket, you have to know what you're doing in order to find the bugs. Just looking at it, you're not going to see the bugs at first glance.
But you don't want to get Gush Katif.
But if you're out in Atlanta, you might not have Gush Katif lettuce.
Right.
So in that case, you should use horseradish better. Or bring with you Gush Katif lettuce. So you could bring it with you. Figure out a way of doing it. But it's not worth eating bugs. To transgress 15 biblical mitzvot in order to perform one rabbinic is not good math. So now we're going to fold up our chasa. Saw the leaf before I started out with it? It was about this size, yeah? Saw the leaf. We're going to try to figure out if a leaf like this gives us the volume we need.
You just rinse each side, and then just dry them.
That's not enough. For sure not. For sure not. If you look at them closely, I'll bring you a picture of the bugs you find in there. That's not enough.
They're actually same color as the lettuce.
He pushes it under, he does both sides, and he looks at it.
So maybe he's getting ready cleaned.
How do you clean your lettuce?
I don't. Because if you look at it closely, it's very hard to see those bugs. Okay, we said we need 1.1. I think you could go with less than this. This is but it's not. You have to put it together. The airspace doesn't count. So depending on if you're working with the stem or the leaf. On the leaf, I think the whole leaf over here would probably give you about 1.1 ounces or drop less. If you eat it with the stem, you got more than 1.1 ounces. Okay, so that gives us about a picture of how much marrow we have to eat. When it comes to eating horseradish, chrein. So do you mind passing me? We have in that bag some horseradish. So ideally, what you should do is get the root, buy horseradish in the store, wash it off, and then grate it. Leave it open for a few hours, Pesach afternoon, before Pesach, the afternoon before Pesach, should leave it open so it shouldn't be too harsh. I mean, after you've grated it, it's going to be very, very tough. If you leave it in the open air for a little bit, then it loses its harshness. Then you put it away in the fridge, and by the Seder by night, you could eat it. Now, they sell in the stores
like to do the mitzvah.
These ready-made horseradishes.
What is horseradish in Hebrew?
Chazeret. They sell these. Oh, we have one here. Thank you. They sell these in the stores. Now, what's the problem with these? That they're mixed with water and sugar and salt and vinegar. The serious problem here, more than the others, which are problematic, you're supposed to eat plain horseradish. Supposed to eat maror with matzah, with charosis, not supposed to eat anything else. But more than the others is the vinegar. Because when something is sitting soaked in vinegar, so after 24 hours it's considered like it's cooked. We have a concept in Halacha that says kavush kimushal, something that sits soaked in a liquid, specifically vinegar, for 24 hours it's as though it was cooked in there. And maror, the Mishnah says explicitly, once maror is cooked, it is no longer kosher to be eaten as mar. You cannot make the blessing on it, alachilas mar. You're not performing the mitzvah. So this should not be used at the Seder. Don't use this. Don't use all these other bought horseradishes. Get yourself a root of horseradish, grind it, and eat it. And if you think it's going to be so harsh, so leave it open in the open air. And then mix it a little bit and leave it some more in the open air. And then they'll lose its harshness. You leave it all the time, or if you make it a day or two early, by the time you reach the Seder, it'll hardly have a taste. It's still okay. This is for those people who can't get lettuce, which won't be pre-checked. Okay, so a picture of how much is going to be 1.1 fluid ounces of our horseradish. That's something you want us to check with this? Huh? Okay, so let's see. Do we have a spoon here?
I brought everything but a spoon.
No, just a second, I'll get a spoon. If you'd go back 10 years, everyone was eating lettuce. Those who knew about it were checking. A lot of people weren't checking. 10 years is an exaggeration. 20 years ago. 20 years ago, everyone was eating lettuce, and everyone was eating bugs. And then people started saying, hey, What are you doing? So they said, I'm checking. I'm rinsing it off in the water. So then they came out with books with pictures, and they showed people, you're rinsing with the water isn't enough. There are bugs which you'd see if you only knew to recognize them. We're not looking for bugs with the microscope. What you don't see with the naked eye, it's true, is not a bug. But if the reason you don't see the bug is because it's camouflaged, which is the problem with the lettuce, not because it's such a small bug, but rather because it's camouflaged on the leaves, if you take that bug and put it on your hand, you'd see it. You'd see a green bug. So then the only reason you're not seeing it is because it's camouflaged. So then you're not allowed to eat that bug. The amoeba that are floating in the water and you don't see, you could eat. The bugs that are crawling around the lettuce, which you could see if they weren't camouflaged, you cannot eat. So then,
so how do those people clean their lettuce? If they're not buying
green, most people aren't cleaning it well. Those who are, so there are different ways with different solutions. Different rabbis have different instructions. How much soap you put in the water, how much vinegar you put in the water, how you have to check it in the light, or there are different instructions how to do it. Each rabbi has his instructions. Each person should talk to his rabbi. But just the rinse in water is for sure not enough. The lettuce which you buy from Gush Katif, usually it used to say, I don't know what it says today, it used to say that you still have to wash it because they're ensuring that those little green bugs aren't there. But what they're not ensuring is that the little flies didn't come in. And there are flies, like sometimes you could see in the, they sell dill. They sell dill, which is not going to have the little bugs, which you can't find. But it does have big bugs. I was a guest at someone's house, and I saw dill in the soup, and I saw little flies floating in the soup.
Oh, mess.
So the, I asked my wife, how could that be? These people would only use Gush Katif. So she said, yeah, chances are they just didn't notice that the packaging says you have to wash it off for the flies. That would come off in water, but people think they're buying Gush Katif so they could stuff it straight into the soup. That's a mistake. Even when you buy Gush Katif, you have to rinse it off because sometimes there are little flies that would come off with water. Then you don't have to be concerned for the small ones, but with the Gush Katif, you have to be concerned for the big ones. Okay? That might be what you saw, that people were rinsing it off and just putting it out to dry. That's what people do with Gush Katif. Gush Katif also, there was a time, I don't know today, where their lettuce could have sand in it. So you wanted to wash it off so it wouldn't have sand in it. Okay.
You can probably use this. And we can still see how much you're putting in.
We'll do something else. This isn't going to work. Okay, so I'll do it this way. So, this, if we could hold it up for the camera. This much.
A lot of. I'm sorry.
Yeah. This much is about 1.1 ounces. And we said not to use this kind of horseradish. Horseradish is white, not red. This is not the horseradish to be used, but that's approximately the volume that one would have to eat if one were eating this type of horseradish, this for maror. Now you could take your time eating it. You don't have to eat it in 1 second. This has sugar in it. This is not kosher for maror. You don't use this for maror.
You could just eat it all at once to get rid of it, like.
You could just down it. You don't have to taste it. You could.
Right.
That's what I do. If you chew it, usually that's when it that's when it burns. If you swallow without chewing, then it's okay.
Boys or men? Come on, man. Take the whole roll down.
Okay. So we discussed the maror. We discussed the matzah. Now it's time to start. So we saw the different measurements, and we saw that this is the volume of matzah that comes out to the stricter measurement of a kezayis. And now we have to begin. So the main point at the Seder are the children. We have a mitzvah to tell over to our children what went on in Egypt. And we start the Seder quickly so the children shouldn't fall asleep. And we're going to see we do a lot of things to get the children involved, to get them to ask questions. And we prepare. So we said we're going to prepare before Pesach. We're going to prepare a cup that has the proper shear of wine. Before Pesach, many families prepare bags with matzah that they've measured that they have enough matzah for kezayis. And each person gets a bag. That saves us time figuring out to have enough. Many families prepare little bags with maror, if you're using lettuce, and each bag has exactly a kezayis. I strongly recommend you do that. And you're supposed to set the table before the Seder begins. We're like kings tonight. We're showing our kids tonight we became free. So even though ordinarily we don't decorate everything fully, we try to commemorate the destruction of the temple, and one is forbidden to use all his gold and silver on the table. On the night of the Seder, we do use all our silver. Even if you have something that someone said, you keep this as collateral, beautiful, something beautiful out of gold or silver, you could put that so long as you don't use it. You could put it to decorate the table. We're showing tonight we're free men. And before the Seder, the table should be set in all its splendor, not like we have here with plasticware, but I wish you guys soon to have families of 20 kids, and then you might want to use plasticware or get your 20 kids to learn how to help and set things up. And gentlemen, where you're going to be guests, help out. The wife is also tired at the end of the Seder, and help your mothers. I noticed that most of the guys here are going to be guests by me, but okay.
We got the hint, Rob.
No, by me it doesn't work. We have such a small kitchen, you guys can't come in. There's not much to help. But you should know, you're supposed to help.
And so good.
We begin the Seder, we set things up the afternoon before the Seder. In the morning, we get rid of all our chametz. Look at the calendars to what time you have to be rid of your chametz. And then we burn the chametz and we say, Kol chamira v'chamia. We declare, in whatever language we understand, we declare, any chametz that's in my possession, I want it to be hefker. Before the day before Pesach, the night before, we do bedikas chametz. And before that, hopefully you'll have gone to your rabbi and sold whatever chametz might be in your possession that he's going to sell to the non-Jew. And the afternoon before Pesach, we're not supposed to do any work. In preparation for the Seder, you're supposed to, before that afternoon, you're supposed to have taken a shower. You're supposed to have shaved. You're supposed to have taken a haircut. You're supposed to have cut your nails. In honor of the Yom Tov, not only in honor of the Seder, every Yom Tov, in honor of the Yom Tov, one is supposed to come into the holiday after having shaved, taken a haircut, done the laundry. On Chol HaMoed, you can't do laundry. So you got to do your laundry, have everything ready, finish your ironing. You get ready for the Seder. That afternoon before Pesach, in biblical times, we would have brought the Paschal offering, the Korban Pesach, on the afternoon. And when one brings a sacrifice, one has a holiday, and one doesn't do work. So in remembrance of that, we don't do any work on the afternoon after Pesach. It's like Chol HaMoed. So you're allowed to turn on a light, it's not like Shabbos, but you're not supposed to go to work. You're not supposed to do work the afternoon that precedes Pesach. You're supposed to be getting ready. You're supposed to be getting ready for the Seder. What do you say? Yeah, to turn on a light, it's like Chol HaMoed. Just like on Chol HaMoed, you could use your car, you could turn on a light. But you're supposed to minimize in any work. You're supposed to have everything ready. You're setting up the table. You're getting ready for the meal. Maybe you're taking a nap to have strength that night. If you haven't yet bought special nash for the children, maybe you're doing that. If you didn't yet get a haircut, maybe you could go do that. But you should try and have everything ready before the afternoon. We go to shul Friday night, the night of Pesach, dressed in our Shabbos clothes. We come back and we switch to the kittel.
I don't have a kittel.
Until you're married.
Oh, okay.
A white shirt is enough for us?
Oh, me.
I want to get married just for one of those.
Okay, when you get married, so the first year you and your wife will go out and buy yourself a kittel. What is a kittel? A kittel is a white garment. Where does it come from? So our sages say that in ancient times, they tell us, when a person used to pass away, they used to use a lot of money to honor him in burial. They'd get him fancy clothing, and they'd spend a lot of money in the burial process. And it became so expensive to bury relatives that people were more pained by the expense of burying their relative than the fact that the relative died. That's what the Gemara uses that term. It reached a point that when a person would die, his relatives would skip down. They'd say, "We can't afford this." They'd leave. Until a great sage who came from a very wealthy family, Rabban Gamliel, who was the Nasi, when he passed away, he left commands. He said, "You bury me in the simplest clothing, take a simple, cheap piece of linen, in their time linen was very cheap, make me a simple garment out of linen, and that's how you bury me, in a simple white linen garment. And when Rabban Gamliel did that, our sages saw the social tide turn, and everyone said, we're like Rabban Gamliel, and they started burying all their relatives in simple white linen clothing. And ever since then, a simple white linen garment, a simple white linen robe, has been the sign of the dead, called tachrichim. Today we call it a kittel. This white garment, which we wear at the Seder,
which we wear
on Yom Kippur, I might be buried in one day. One day...
Why are we mixing the... We'll get to that, just a second.
1 second. So it's a pretty scary thought to wear a garment that the worms might be eating through it to get to you. It's not a pleasant thought, like Michal said. It's a holiday. What are we talking about death for? So what's the idea of this garment? The idea is, on this night, I'm taking out all my gold and all my silver, and I'm sitting here, I'm a free man. I'm drinking 4 cups of wine, and I lean back, and people pour me my wine because I'm a free man. They wash my hands for me. I'm a free man. And I am telling my kids, kids, guess what? Tonight, I became the big boss. I became a free man. So our sages said, on a night like this, you might get a little bit carried away. It's true, there's a mitzvah to show you're a free man. But you might get carried away. So we want to remind you, as free as you are, one day, where are you going to be? In this. So that's one understanding as to why we wear the kittel on the Seder night. It's to remind us that as beautiful and as free as everything is, remember, one day you're gonna be down there. So don't get carried away. You don't have to tell them that's why you're wearing it. But there's another understanding as to why we wear the kittel. And the other understanding is because I'm a king tonight, gentlemen. I'm a free man. So I'm wearing a royal robe. I'm wearing a robe that's all white, like the angels do. Just like on Yom Kippur, we wear the white kittel, like the angels that are white. On Yom Kippur, we don't eat. We're like angels for 24 hours. So too, at the Seder night, we wear it. The Netziv offers a third understanding. He says that a lot of the things we do on the Seder is to commemorate the Paschal offering, the Korban Pesach. And just like we mentioned, when people would bring the Korban Pesach, or any korban was a day of celebration. So then Netziv says they had special clothing when they were celebrating bringing an offering. And this is like a special garment I'm wearing in honor of the Korban Pesach.
Kleenex matches your...
Thank you. Now, when we come to the Seder, we have to have certain things... Yeah? Not everyone has the custom to wear a kittel at the Seder. It is a pretty accepted custom, but not everyone has the custom to wear a kittel at the Seder. And only married people wear the kittel. There's also a custom that the first year that a person is married, he doesn't wear a kittel. But I don't know if that applies to a person who's already married with kids. I don't know. You could do whatever you want. Okay, you just got married, so I don't know if you have 100 other things on your head if you have to worry about getting a kittel. Next year you'll get a kittel. Yeah.
I'm just looking at the leg going on and off.
Okay.
Sorry.
When we come to the Seder, we said the table has to be set and ready to begin. So part of the table being set is being prepared for the mitzvot of the night. And we're going to begin with something that you're probably not familiar with, but that's the halacha. And then we'll go on to what you're familiar with, which is the custom, and therefore it's also the halacha. And that is the ke'ara, the Seder plate. What is the concept of a Seder plate? So simply understood, the concept is, it revolves around two basic understandings in halacha. One is, no, don't show that, because that's not what we're going to discuss. Seder. I told you, it's not what you're used to. We have a rule in Ma'avirin ala Mitzvot. We don't pass over mitzvot. If I have two mitzvot before me, so I perform the one that's closer to me. I don't walk by one in order to do the other. I say first do the one you hit first, and then do the next one. That's why ideally, when we put our tefillin in the bag, we should put the shelyad, the one we're going to place on our arm first, that should be on top. Because otherwise, I'm going to have to bypass the shelrosh. I have a mitzvah to put the shelrosh on. I say, wait, putting the shelyad first. So we say, no, put the shelyad on top. Because you shouldn't really bypass the shelrosh. You have to put the shelyad first. So make sure that's the one you encounter first. For if you encounter the shelrosh first, if that's on top of the bag, then you're in violation of this rule of en ma'avirin ala mitzvot, that one should not pass up an opportunity to perform a mitzvah. There was once a question, there were limited vaccines in Israel. They had a problem of certain diseases that were breaking out in the hospital, in children's hospital, and they couldn't get more vaccines in time. So the doctor called one of the great rabbis and he asked him, how do I decide which child gets the vaccine and which doesn't? So the rabbi told him, the rule is, en ma'avirin ala mitzvot. You don't pass up a mitzvah. You walk out of the room with the vaccine, with the shots ready. The first child you encounter is the first child to get the vaccine. Every other child you encounter, it's the order of how you encounter it. Not who paid the most money to the hospital, not who has the most clout, nothing. The weight is, that's how you decide. You don't pass up any child. Whoever you hit first, that's the one that gets the vaccine. You don't do any other, you don't factor in any other thing. So, this is the concept. You try to arrange things that you don't have to pass one mitzvah to perform another mitzvah. So at the Seder, we're going to have many mitzvot. We're going to have the matzahs, we're going to have the maror, we're going to have the karpas, which we haven't yet discussed. So we arrange them on the plate in the order that we're going to do them. So now let's discuss the ordering of the Seder night. We begin with Kaddish. We perform Kiddush, like every Yom Tov when the, or Shabbos, when the day begins. We sanctify the day, we hold the glass of wine, and we bless the day. We take note of its coming, and we make Shechionu. And that is going to be our first cup. So of course, our cup of wine is right next to us. That's not part of the Seder. Then Urchatz, we wash our hands, because we're going to dip a vegetable in salt water. And then Karpas, we dip a green vegetable in salt water. So on our Seder plate, let's start preparing it. The first thing we're going to have is a green vegetable and salt water to be dipped in. Now the salt water is supposed to be prepared before Yom Tov, like everything else on the Kara, but salt water has a special prohibition that you're not supposed to prepare salt water on Shabbos or Yom Tov, because they used to prepare salt water to preserve the vegetables. Now preserving vegetables on Shabbos or Yom Tov is forbidden. You're not allowed to put vegetables in brine for a long-term preservation process, pickling process. You're not allowed to do that. So our rabbi said, we don't want people to do something that comes close to that. You're not even supposed to make salt water. So the salt water that you need for pickling is a very high concentration. It's a third. But our rabbi said, ideally prepare salt water before Yom Tov. Many homes, they don't. When they're ready to do karpas, so the wife runs into the kitchen and she mixes in salt and water. So if you're at a home like that, at least you should prepare a small amount of salt water and make sure that you don't have a ratio of a third to two-thirds. So let's put in salt in our water.
Good.
I don't know, did you put in any salt?
No.
Okay.
Enough water?
Yeah, how much water do you need? All you need is to dip. You need to dip and you need to taste it. How much salt do you want to put in? As much as you want. It's enough for me.
Enough?
You should probably put in more so you get the taste in. I mean, I don't know if you'll even taste that.
I'll stir it up.
Okay. So there are different customs as to whether or not the salt water goes on the plate itself. So we begin, our plate is going to have, the thing that is closest to you is going to be the green vegetable, which is going to be used for karpas.
Yeah, we just started a minute ago.
Are you
serious?
No. Yishakach for everything you put. Now we have another rule, and that is that we honor the right more than the left. So therefore, our green vegetable is going to go on the right. So the first thing on the plate, the thing that's closest to us, is the green vegetable, and it is on the right.
Here, could you pass the...
Oh, that's a good idea. So we have our karpas, our green vegetable, is closest on the right. And to the left of that, we have our salt water. You don't need a lot of salt water. Here we have much more than we need. Next.
That's your 7-up, bro.
No one knows that. Next, what's the next mitzvah we're going to perform? We're going to say over the whole Haggadah, and we're going to have the matzahs. So we have karpas, salt water. Then we need our matzahs. Yes? Sure, we're going to eat. Tonight? Oh, you don't want to stay?
I haven't been 30 days before.
Okay, so...
Alright, I was wondering if...
We're going to eat. Yeah. Whoever has the custom not to eat shouldn't eat. Litvol. Gentlemen, you want to take 3 matzahs each?
Yeah.
Try to get 3 whole matzahs?
I saw it there. It was not that expensive.
Question. Why we do honor the life more than the
It's a good question. For now, accept it as is. That's our custom. It's a... it's a spiritual concept that right is on it. Right is the side of strength. Right is on it. Yeah.
Also, in the way it's like eating.
Wait, we'll get to that. That's a good point. We haven't yet spoken about that yet. Now, after we're going to eat the matzah, after we make hamotzi, we're going to perform the mitzvah of maror. So the next thing we're going to have is our maror again on the right. So, gentlemen, you should each take what you evaluate as a kezias of maror.
Can I ask you one question?
Put on the right.
The significance of the potato.
We'll get to the potato. We haven't even started the agad yet. We'll get to the potato.
Oh, what are we doing?
We're just introducing how you prepare the plate for the seder. We haven't even begun yet. And then we need charoses. What is charoses? So what is charoses? Who knows what is charoses?
It's
yeah.
A paste.
It was actually supposed to represent the stuff that was between the bricks.
The mortar, right. Charoses, our sages instituted for a few things. We dip the maror in the charoses. Our sages say the maror has some element to it that is dangerous to eat plain. And the only way you could eat the maror and be healthy, in their time at least, was if you dipped it in the charoses. What is charoses? So right now we're going to stop what we're doing and make charoses. Charoses is a dip that is supposed to look like mortar, and we make it of the fruits that the Jewish people were compared to. And there are different traditions how to make charoses. There's no specific tradition. We grind apples and nuts. Apples, the verse says, "Tachat ha-tapuach o-ticha." Yeah, you want to grind that? Come on, you could do better than that. We need to be the ground. Okay, so we grind walnut, and we're going to grind up apple, and we put in ground up dates. Today you could buy ground up dates. And then different people have different customs. Some put pieces of cinnamon, sticks of cinnamon, to remember the straw that we use there. If you burst the bag, it'll fly all over here. And each one should ask his grandmother, and then we add wine. Now, the idea of wine is to remember the blood. We had different, our children were placed in the bricks. The Egyptians would take Jewish children and use them in place of bricks also. This especially fits with the Midrash that says that every night when the Jews would go home, the walls would crumble down. The Egyptians saw to it that they'd build on a place and in a fashion, or they'd sink in a fashion where they'd have to redo the work every day. So then it makes sense that they take babies and put them in the wall, because they didn't care if the wall would crumble. They knew it was crumbling anyways. That's why the city was called Ramses. Otherwise, you ask yourself logically, the Egyptians want you to build a wall that'll last. You try to put in a baby instead of a brick, the wall won't last. So what were the Egyptians thinking? Aside from cruelty, practically, how is it going to work? So I'm saying, one way to possibly understand that is along with the Midrash that says the Egyptians weren't interested in the Jews necessarily building something. They wanted them busy, doing stupid work and work that would self-destruct.
Take the glass, pour some on the plate, and then roll it.
Okay. So we're going to make charoses now. We're going to stop for a second. Right. So we have one vegetable in the beginning of the meal, the karpas, which we dip in salt water in the very beginning of the meal before we begin. And then after we begin the meal, we have the mitzvah of eating maror, and we dip the maror into the charoses. Now the charoses is a dip that different people make it different ways. The main idea is that you have some kind of dip to dip the maror into.
That was our maror.
And this is our maror, the bitter herb. This is one type of maror.
Which one?
This is lettuce, romaine lettuce.
Why is it considered maror?
What? Because the pasuk says mirorim, which means different species of maror, and the Mishnah enumerates five species of maror, one of which is chasa, which is romaine lettuce, and that is the ideal one that the Mishnah enumerates.
Right.
Okay. So, when you attend seder by you, wherever you attend, by your parents or by your hosts, most often they don't give each person his own seder plate, but for now I want you at least to practice each having your own seder plate so you get the idea of what's happening. And for future, right. By next year everyone's married, right?
Next year.
Okay, I meant by next Pesach. Thank you. Don't laugh. He's laughing at us. Okay. And you guys are doing a great job making the charoses, yishkoach. So we have charoses ready over here. So on our plate so far, we have our karpas, our green vegetable, closest to us on the right, our salt water on the left. Right after that, we have the matzahs, three matzahs. We're going to discuss why three in a minute. And then we have our maror further to the front, again on the right. And what we dip it in, the charoses, which we just made, we discussed how we make it. We grind up nuts, walnuts. We mix them with ground up dates, which you could get date spread and just mix it together. We mix that with apples and a lot of red wine, and you could put in the wine first to make it easier for mixing. And you get yourself a delicious charoses like you guys just made. So charoses has no tradition exactly how it shouldn't be made. Different generations made it from different fruits. The idea is to make it from fruits that the Jewish people were resembled. That the prophets said we resemble, and to put red wine in it. It's supposed to look like mortar, and the we put cinnamon sticks on it to remind us of the straw that was used in the building of in the work of the Egyptians. We were not resembled to apples. The pasuk says tachat tapuach oralticha. The pasuk describes how the Jewish women would entice the Jewish men under the apple trees to have marital relations, and if not for that enticement, the Jewish men were too wiped out to have children. And it's thanks to that which occurred under the apple tree, which that's why the Jewish people continued, because the women were able to encourage the men and bring mirrors. And that's our parsha also, those mirrors. They'd sit with the mirrors, and they'd look in the mirror with their husband and say, I'm more beautiful than you, look at how pretty I am. And he'd start looking, and when a person sees affection, meaning you can't see the affection you show your wife, but when you look in a mirror, when you're standing hugging your wife, so that arouses a person, and that's why by doing that, they're able to arouse their husbands under the apple tree. Seeing affection arouses a person. That's why a person is not supposed to show exceptional affection outside of the home towards his wife. Now, what's considered exceptional affection? There's room to discuss. I don't want to go on a tangent. Let's continue. So we have. Thank you. We have over here.
Some of the song comes from Da 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 that's in here in the tree.
I don't think so. So here we have charoses on the left. We have a tremendous amount of charoses. And more coming for each of you guys. You could each put some on your plates. Get your plates ready. And the mess that you guys see on the table is not supposed to be here for the Seder. It's just because we're preparing everything. But all this preparation was supposed to have taken place this afternoon. And now by the Seder, we have our charoses. The charoses is supposed to be further up from the matzahs because you're going to use it after the matzahs. You have to have karpas, salt water, then the matzahs. After that, further away is the maror to the right, charoses to the left.
Salt water,
yeah.
So where does that go?
We have karpas, green vegetable on the right. That's the first thing we're going to use. Then salt water. then the matzahs, we're going to begin the meal. Then we're going to, after we begin the meal, eat some maror and dip that maror in harosis, which is on the left.
We're not actually going to magid, are we?
Yeah, we'll see how much time we have. I hope to, yeah.
Did you say harosis on the left?
Harosis is on the left because the harosis is what we're going to dip the maror in. So the maror is the main one. So the maror, the bitter herb, has to be on the right. That's the main point. The harosis is just the dip that goes on the left.
Alright, next batch.
Pass it down.
Pass it down. Here's the next batch. What is that?
No, you have to put dates stuff. Oh, you're not putting that.
Here's the one thing. That's the mixed with the apples.
There's no way.
You have to put some wine too.
There's no dates in here.
You're putting the dates in. He just mixed that with apples.
Okay. Let's
continue, gentlemen. Here, now, traditionally, we said in the time of the Beis Mikdash, we used to have two sacrifices brought on Pesach. We had the Pesach offering, but the Torah says you're supposed to eat the Pesach offering on a full stomach, not like you're a hungry person. You're supposed to eat it when you're full. Now, the Pesach offering is supposed to be brought from a sheep that's under a year old, and sheep, biologically, usually give birth a month before Pesach. So if you're bringing a sheep that's under a year old, you're talking about a sheep that's probably, most likely, about a month old. Talking about a very, very small sheep. You're not going to get a lot of food out of that. So they used to bring sacrifices in honor of the holiday called the Korban Chagiga. Chagiga like Chag. What is the term Chag? Chag is what we call a festival. It comes from the term Chog. Chog is a circle. We dance in a circle. So like you dance in a circle, you're happy on the holiday as though you were dancing in a circle. And that's the idea of Chag. So the special sacrifice that's brought on the holiday is called a korban sacrifice, chagiga, of the festival. And now that we don't have a temple, we cannot bring that sacrifice. So in memory of these two sacrifices, we have two cooked items at the table. So you could cook a potato and cook an egg, and that's enough. But we have a custom that one of the cooked items is a cooked leg or hand of an animal or a bird. So usually we have a chicken wing or a chicken foot that's roasted, and that's in commemoration of the... Do we have any? Did you get it?
I brought a wing.
Where's our wing?
But it's not cooked.
Okay. So we'll make believe it's cooked.
It's in the wing bag.
Wait, we didn't get to what you eat yet. Just a second. We're first describing what's here, and the second we'll discuss what we eat. Okay.
I tried to cook it. They won't let me cook it.
So we have a roasted piece of... Just one second, please. One second. We have a roasted piece of chicken over here on the right. And we're going to have our cooked egg.
Here, give me
Michal, could you pass me... Could you pass me the egg, please? We have a cooked egg over here. So let's review our order of our plate.
That's our dinner.
We have first our green vegetable, which we're going to dip in karpas on the right. And then on the left, Michael, your plate isn't set right. Why follow?
What do you mean? Right, because it's just not
so
right.
So just a second. Listen. We need the green vegetable on the right, mm-hmm. and then the salt water on the left. Uh-huh. Directly after that is supposed to be the matzahs. Uh-huh. Because the matzahs is what we're going to eat next. After we say over the maggid of the agada, we eat the matzahs.
This thing is...
That's the green vegetable we're going to dip.
Oh,
that's on the right.
How about this thing?
That's the maror.
Which goes?
Which is after the matzah, further away than the matzah.
Oh, but the matzah's bigger than the plate, right?
Right, right. That's why sometimes we have little bowls. We don't have plates like
here
this.
Here it is.
Huh?
Here is good.
The matzah is supposed to be closer because in order you don't want to have to pass the maror to get to the matzah.
Right. So I have the matzah here.
Okay. Right. After the matzah, we have on our right the maror, and the left is the harosis, the dip which the maror will be dipped into. And last, we have our roasted shank bone on the right, and our cooked egg on the left. You don't have to have a roasted shank bone. You could also have anything cooked. Our custom is to have two cooked items in commemoration of the two sacrifices that were brought on Pesach. Now that we have this plate ready, what?
What are the two sacrifices?
The two sacrifices, one is the Pesach offering, which was roasted, and that's why we roast. The custom is to roast the shank bone. And one was the Korban Chagiga, the holiday sacrifice, which which we have the Egan commemoration of.
Your thing's not set up right now.
Now, we will eat everything that we have here other than these two items. The egg, some have the custom to eat, but the roasted piece of meat we do not eat. And that is because on the night of Pesach, we do not eat any roasted meat. Because in the time of the temple, they would roast the Pesach offering. And we don't want people to think that we're bringing the Pesach offering in our own private home. So we are careful on the night of Pesach that all the meat that we're going to eat is going to be cooked. We don't eat any roasted meat. And therefore, the roasted shank bone, which is on the Pesach plate, is never going to get eaten. It's going to get eaten by day, but not on the night of Pesach.
So, how can we make the boil the meats? How do we cook the meats?
Your wife could call my wife. She'll tell her how to cook the meat. Let's continue.
So the shank bone, I was writing, where do we put it exactly?
That's on the right, because that's the Korban Pesach. Yeah, let's draw it on the board. That'll make it up.
Can I get an egg?
On the upper right?
Please, thanks.
Do you have salt marker here?
What does it say? It's like a marker.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to get it.
What's the Hebrew word for
Zerah? Zerah is just an arm.
It's a bone.
We use Zerah as the arm, and the reason we prefer to use the shank bone, which is like the arm, is because where God said he is taking the Jewish people with an outstretched arm. So in commemoration of the outstretched arm God took us out, we take an arm of a chicken or something else and we roast that, and that's our going to be in commemoration of the Korban Pesach.
Sorry, I'm breaking tradition.
Huh?
I haven't eaten.
Okay, so everyone's hungry. Even though you all had supper an hour ago. When you hit the Seder, you're even more hungry. Thank you. So let's just draw on the blackboard what it looks like.
It's okay, Michal. We gotta continue. It's okay. Thank you. Okay. Yeah.
Vegetable, which is going to be dipped in the salt water. Then our matzah, our three matzahs. Then our maror, a bitter herb, which is going to be dipped in the charoset. And then our zra, the shank bone, and the egg, which are in commemoration of the Korban Pesach and in commemoration of the Korban Chagiga.
Two meanings for the egg, though.
Oh, okay. So we'll get to that. That's a good point. We'll get to that. What you see in the average Agada is not what we just drew. This is what it says in Shulchan Aruch. But the Arizal said something else, which is what you guys see in your Agadas. The Arizal said, you arrange the three matzahs one on top of the other, and then you arrange the plate like you'll all see in your Agados, and that has become the accepted custom today. Most people today do like it says in the Agada, like the children learn in yeshiva. Children don't even learn what it says in Shulchan Aruch today. I remember as a child, I never learned this. This what we just said is what it says in Shulchan Aruch. But the Arizal said a different way, and that's the way we have it today, most people. We have three matzahs, and on top of them, a plate. We have a special tray to hold the three matzahs, on top of them, a special plate. And on that plate, we have a special order of how to set it up, and that's, they draw you the picture over here.
Where's the Maxwell Haggadah? Oh, here we are.
Oh, they don't draw you a picture here?
Yeah.
Ah. Do you mind passing that here?
First page.
So our Maxwell Haggadah has the way the Arizal says. The maror in the front, the karpas on the left, the charoses on the right, the beitzah on the left in the front, and the zra on the right in the front. And that's what everyone's used to. That's how most people have their Seder. And you could go that way. That's the way most of the Jewish people do it. Yeah, just like that.
Three matzahs up there.
Three matzahs up there. I don't know what they mean by that.
Three matzahs are.
Okay, so we went through the different customs of how this has to be arranged. Now we've rushed home. We get home on time, and it's ready time to begin. We all got to get our pillows, because we're going to be leaning like three men on this night. So let's get our pillows, and we'll begin.